right, guys. We're back to some old mysteries. Just for a little bit, actually. We're taking a slight detour back to the 90s. Before October, what is it, like October 20th or October, what's the date?
I think it's early. I want to say 7th.
I don't know. Let's see. Let's double check. October 19th.
Yeah, I knew it was pretty early. So, we're recording this on September 9th. So
October
19th,
1-9.
Oh, 19th. I thought you said 9th.
So we're going to have, we're going to try to start covering season 5. And I think currently now, the Old Unsolved Mysteries is available on YouTube. And if you're watching through Amazon Prime, you can watch free through IMDb TV, which has a bunch of commercials. It's kind of annoying. It's not free anymore. Oh. Or you can spend 99 cents an episode. But yeah, I mean, I think YouTube is the best bet. I at least they have like revolving ads. The IMDb TV is like just the same commercial
the same
over,
ad
and over.
Over and over.
Hey, I don't want a Gillette fucking razor. Like, I didn't the first time I saw it, and I definitely don't like the 50th time I saw it.
Hey, do you want to see a 3-minute commercial for Subway? Because that's what you're going to see for an hour.
You get the same commercial for 3 times.
And I don't mean like a 3-minute commercial. I mean 3 minutes of a 30-second commercial.
So I wonder how it works. I know this is totally off topic, but I wonder if when Jocelyn watches something, she gets different ads than I do. I get Traeger grills. It's weird.
Oh man. So,
and Jocelyn, when we're watching together, she's like, I've never seen a Traeger ad in my life. I'm like, are you serious? And I've never seen a Gillette one.
You've never seen what, Gillette?
I'm trying to think about which ones I saw today. I don't remember any of them really.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
No.
Easy breezy, beautiful cover girl.
I don't remember Subway, but I remember seeing fucking Gillette razor ad, like the same one
over
a bunch
of
times today.
Speaking of Traeger grills, if anyone that works for Traeger,
yeah, give us a grill.
Hook some
we
guys
love
up.
Grills. Yeah. Oh, love by this point, we're collecting smokers, so send it on over.
Hey, Sam, so how was your guys' trip?
It was good. It was long.
I think we hit 8 states.
How many bong hits did you have?
No bong hits.
Actually, yeah, no bong hits. It's fun.
Lots of rips, but no bong hits.
We essentially did a tour, an American tour of marijuana dispensaries throughout the country. Up through the middle from Texas all the way up to the Pacific
Northwest. Well, not from
Northwest.
Texas.
We started in Texas.
Right?
There's no dispensaries. I guess starting in Colorado. And then up through Oregon, and then, of course, California.
The reason why they call it the Mile High
and Washington
State, right?
Yeah. We actually hit the corner of Colorado on our drive, and we were like, dispensary, okay, thank you.
Ooh, what was the weather like over there, like in Colorado?
It was
hot.
Yeah. It was
hot?
It wasn't hot, but it wasn't like, cold. It was pretty hot.
The place where we stopped at, like, we stopped there probably early afternoon.
Okay.
And like the high for that day was supposed to be like 89.
Oh yeah, that is warm.
Yeah, the sun was out a lot of the time, even when we got to where we were going, which was Washington, Olympia to be more specific. It wasn't that gloomy, but it was nice. Yeah, we went to go hang out with some friends and their kids, so we drove all the way across the country to just hang out in a house with them. I mean, not much else we can do besides hike and stuff, which is
what you guys pass anything that you're like, oh, I definitely want to come back and check this out. Like
so much.
Oh my goodness.
Oh dude, we drove through so much awesome, like, driving, so many awesome like little towns. And
driving back home, we took the Pacific Coast Highway along the Oregon coast.
That was a smart move. Who's
and we
that?
Drove
it's
through
country.
We drove through 3 little like townships that had fisheries, and like it smelt so good, like driving by, like you could smell like fresh seafood, and you're just like, fuck.
Did
and
you go
we
through?
We didn't have any chowder, and then we didn't.
Like, we
didn't
fucked
stop
up
in
because like
places either. We're
2 hours prior to what? Driving through these towns, we had.
Oh, I saw your little Twin Peaks thing, though. That was cool.
Oh yeah, we went to we did all the Twin Peaks stuff. We went to Snoqualmie Falls, which is the Great Northern Hotel.
We had an awesome free burger at the Double R.
Yeah, the diner from Twin Peaks, we went.
Oh, yeah, the food looks amazing.
It's called Tweeds, cafe, and we went and we were going to eat lunch and then have a piece of pie and coffee. Dan got coffee, but before we got our piece of pie, before I even finished my burger, they were like, "Oh, there's a gas leak. I'm sorry, but you guys have to leave." And then and the firefighters immediately showed up, and then they were like, "Oh, you guys are good." Like, I was pretty much done with my food. They were like, "You guys are good. Like, we're not going to charge you. It's fine."
And, we didn't get to have the pie.
I didn't get a piece of cherry pie. I didn't get a coffee.
I didn't get a coffee mug.
Yeah, we wanted to get a double R mug too, but Dan at least got to drink the damn fine coffee.
It was damn fine.
Was it damn fine?
It was damn fine.
A little bit jealous, but all right. Okay, so enough about our fun vacation. let's get into a little bit of some 90s true crime. Back to the classic vintage stack.
Vintage, we could say Bush
era, Unsolved Mysteries, Bush Senior era, Unsolved Mysteries.
I'm not talking about George either.
Oh, you're not talking about George. That's funny. Also,
we're talking about Centerfold.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is for some reason our subwoofer was unplugged, and today we had the volume up a little bit louder, and I recently plugged the subwoofer back in, and Robert Stack's bassy tones were coming through loud.
Someone got heated.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. It was like I felt like a vibration in my undercarriage. Yes. My Joukowsky.
Later on this week, David's buying a flashlight, gluing it into the subwoofer, and that's what he's going to use.
It's like an ASMR, like Robert Stack sexual thing I'm going to start doing. And you can read my blog all about it. No, but yeah. So the classic stack, we have them. We have them in a leather coat, we have them in a regular jacket. He's behind some woods and he's telling us some interesting stories today.
Where was that shot at, by the way? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
Boggy Creek.
Very blue water. There was
definite pine. I saw some pine there.
Mm-hmm. But the water behind, it was so blue.
Yeah, it looked like a Bob Ross painting.
Maybe it was Lake Champlain.
Maybe it was Lake Champlain.
Champlain or Champagne?
It's Lake Champlain.
Champlain.
There ain't nothing plain about this Champlain.
Sounds so generic.
Lake Champlain. But it's spelled all like Plagney, isn't it? Like Lake Champlain.
It's where they shot Lake Placid?
No, definitely not. When we talk about the Lake Champlain thing, there's a great piece of fiction that was created from that story. But first, let's talk about this wanted case.
Wanted.
This is a murder of this poor boyfriend, this poor, sweet, cute, mulleted man. I don't know. The girlfriend may or may not have had a little bit more to do with it than she's saying, but let's get into it. So let's go to Hamilton, Indiana, small lake resort town. What do you say? The population throbs to the thousands in the summer. He didn't say throbs, but engorges to the summer. Engorges to the thousands in the summer. Sorry, I'm just thinking about Lake Champlain monsters now. Throbbing and engorging. So, yeah, it's a small lake town. People come in the summer, so there's a little bit more people. So, 7 a.m., August 9th, 1989, end of summer, screams can be heard at 7 a.m. when Christy Mansfield goes to her boyfriend's house and finds him dead. Dun, 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 dun. The victim, Todd Kelly.
The generic scream they used, too.
Yeah. Did you notice? It's not quite a Wilhelm scream because it's a lady, but it's, yeah. Todd Kelly was the boyfriend. He stabbed 7 times in the chest. And apparently she had been there just hours ago. And he said he was going to stay up all night because he had work. So, she had been there hanging out with him just before that. They immediately suspect Christie's other, ex-boyfriend. And this is a guy named Mahfouz Huck. But we'll get into him a little bit later.
Yuck.
Yeah. So let's. He looks like an IT guy.
He looks. It's weird.
Have you tried turning IT it off guy and on again?
There's one picture of him where he's kind of handsome and steamy, and then there's another picture of him where he looks like a total dork, like Like, there's one picture where he's got, like, 5 o'clock shadow and he's not wearing glasses. And then there's another one where he has a mustache, like a dorky mustache, and, like, creep perv glasses. And I'm like, is that the same? How is that the same person? So let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about Todd and Chrissy's relationship. They met in high school. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I'm looking at the picture again, and it's so terrible. It's the one where she looks like she's going to prom, right?
Yeah, yeah. And he looks like her dad. Or like her...
Not even, you know, like her dad.
Well, no, because like they're, like her races stepdad. Are different. But, yeah. He looks like her boss or her fucking... her English teacher or something. I don't know. So Todd and Christy met in high school. Apparently... Todd asked her after high school to get married, and she wasn't ready. So that they broke things off at that time. And the next fall, she enrolls in a small college, and that's where she meets old Mahfuz. He's a Bangladesh. He's an immigrant from Bangladesh. So they start dating. He's real nice to her. But they soon it's found out he gets arrested right after they start dating. Right. And he gets arrested for these three separate robberies. One is about $100,000 worth of jewelry. And apparently that was like his aunt, right? Like he stole that shit from his aunt.
I don't know where he stole it from.
There's something about a family member in there. So he blames his accomplice for the whole thing and he's put on house arrest. But the whole time they're still dating and he becomes super possessive, doesn't want her to see or talk to anybody. And he said he would kill anyone who was with Christy. So 2 weeks before the murder, Mahfuz walks 10 miles barefoot.
You guys walked 7. Imagine doing 10 barefoot?
Yeah. Fuck. So he shows up at Christy's house after walking 10 miles, and then he learns that she's with Todd Kelly. She's not even home. And then a day before the murder... Mahfuz shows up at Todd's friend's house when they're working on a car, and according to the friend, they exchange some civil words about Christy. He kindly asks if he's gonna if Todd's gonna stop dating her, and Todd politely says no, like, you know, we're back together. She's in love with me, and yeah, he says there's no raised voices, and that's how that altercation ended. But he died the next day. The sheriff immediately notices that the crime scene's been tampered with. The body had clearly been cleaned and moved, and there was no sheets on the bed, so they surmise that the sheets were used to move the body. They find a blood spot on the floor after they cut up a piece of carpet.
Said it was pretty hard to find, right? Like, yeah. They said it was...
They found cigarette butts everywhere that were Mahfuz's brand. And Todd's,
which is crazy because now they could test like DNA on those if they wanted to.
Yeah, now it's just like, oh, they both smoke Marlboro 27s or whatever. And Todd's car was completely wiped clean and the keys were gone, so that's very suspicious. Like, not even his prints are there. And this leads them to think that he was planning on moving the body in Todd's car, but Todd's car like didn't work, so that didn't work, right?
Which is didn't weird, have a headlights. Right? Because weren't they? Dad, weren't they working on it in the scene before when he showed up at the house?
Yeah, you should have known. Actually, right?
they were working on it. They had the hood open, and him and his buddy were in there doing some Bash Brother mullet stuff.
Tinkering that hood.
What'd you say, Trash Brother?
I said Bash Brother, but oh. Trash Brother sounds way cooler.
Trash Brother mullet stuff. Hey guys, I'm Trash Brother Mullet 1, and this is my friend Trash Brother Mullet 2. Together we are the Trash Brother Mullets. And lock up your daughters and lock up your wives. Hell, lock up your grandmothers. We don't care. We have no limit. We're Trash Brothers and we have mullets.
Hell, fuck it. Lock up anybody because it's been a long quarantine. We'll fuck anything. Jesus your dogs, Christ, your wives, your goats.
For the rest of us.
Goats. Thank you. Thank you, Trash Brother Mullet number 2.
Did you think goats?
Yeah. Goats?
Oh, man.
Had your daughters, had your wives, had your chickens,
had various mammals. We will not go to the, we will not go to the bird, the avian. I don't know.
Trash Brothers. We are very specific. That was funny. That was a funny joke. I didn't think you were going to take it that far.
Better believe it. Well, rethink it. Hey,
brother, when you got a chance to go down that road, you got to go down that road.
And you got to find a warm place to park it. Am I right, brother?
Oh, yeah.
Brother. Oh, damn it. Okay, sorry.
What did they say today, Dan? Surprise, sister has a big dick.
Oh, my God. That sentence is so loaded.
Hey. I'm not gonna lie. I looked that up on Pornhub.
Is it there?
Don't do it.
I hope that's a lie. Surprise! Oh God! Oh, that's making me like. At first, it made me laugh, and now it's just making me queasy. Like, okay. Okay, back to Mafu's. Jesus.
Oh, and I loved how she called him Foos. She's all Foos.
Foos would never do that. You know what her favorite part about him was? The foosballs.
The foosballs.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
So many. We're going to get so many one star. Hey, these guys are being real mean.
Okay, by the way, guys, just so you know, if you haven't known this already, we are a comedy podcast that watches Unsolved Mysteries, an old 90s show. We made a Bush joke at the beginning of this episode. So I'm sorry we're not Sarah Koenig or Bob Ruff or any criminal serious girl investigator.
Or, yeah.
We just like talking about true crime and hanging out with our buds. And
we got a one-star review because I guess they thought we were like rude and disrespectful of Ray Rivera and his wife. And I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I guess they didn't know that we're light comedic manner, but at the same time, I don't know.
I feel like we're back to that episode. I feel like we were
so fucking like, I feel so bad for Allison and Ray's wife. Like, I don't know. Like,
oh, I do too.
And I feel like it comes off pretty well in the podcast, but you know,
I really listened to it because I was so, honestly, I was like, oh my God, are we disrespectful? And I went back and I listened and I was like, well, I mean, I don't think we said anything.
I think I start the episode by saying this is Ray's story, but it's also very much Allison's story. And
I felt like we were very like pretty respectful. I mean, yeah, we make jokes about stuff.
I mean, Dan, and then immediately Dan did say it's raining men.
So, but, okay. I mean, come on. We're not disrespectful.
Bygones. All right. But let's agree to disagree.
I'm sorry. If you don't like us, you can turn us off. You don't got to be leaving us one-star reviews. We know that we're a comedy podcast, guys. You don't have to tell us.
Yeah, it's free. So between 11 and 1 on the night of the murder, witnesses see Mafu's walking barefoot towards Todd's. So, sorry, I think the first night, the 10 miles, he's not barefoot. But the night he murders Todd, he walks there barefoot.
Right.
So Christy and Todd apparently that night were at house in bed around the same time when people are seeing him walking towards the house. So this is all starting to line up. That night, apparently, Christy hears a noise outside of Todd's house. And the dog was outside, and it was late, and she had to go home. So she just what did she do? She takes him down the street to get something to drink because he's just going to stay up all night because he has work in the morning. And she says she drops him off. And when she drops him off, she thinks this Mrs. when Mafu's gets in the house. While they're gone, she thinks that's when Mafu's gets in the house. And then when she drops him off, she thinks that Mafu's is waiting in the house. Coroner says that he was dead 15 minutes after Christy drops Todd off. So cut to 4:30 a.m. when Mafu's calls Christy from his parents' house. And then 2 hours later, he apparently shows up in her bedroom and she like dumps him.
Something screams suspicious when you like call someone at like, what was it? At what time? Like two, four, three, four, like
four in the morning,
4:30
to be like, Hey, just to let you know, like I'm at my, what was it? My grandmother's house.
I'm at my parents' house.
Or my parents' house.
They can prove that that call happened.
And then immediately 2 hours later, you show up at your like girlfriend's house, like, Hey, I'm here.
No. Yeah, I agree.
And Hey, you know, I called you 2 hours ago and now I'm physically
here. No, I'm here.
And
no,
I'm here. And then she dumps him. So you can,
like...
And apparently when she dumps him, he says, I hope you have a nice life. And then he's all spiteful.
Like...
Because he just murdered the boyfriend, but...
Even if she's clueless. Even if she's just clueless of, like, what has transpired, that just... Like, that story just seems like...
Yeah. And we're not the only ones...
Immediate guilt.
And we're not the only ones that think so, because... Todd's family also thinks this. Todd's dad creepily says she was there all night. He thinks that she had to have been there all night. And the cops don't even necessarily think that she murdered him, but that maybe she was just so scared that she helped Mahfouz get rid of the body. And I think that's what the parents are alluding to.
Yeah, like, you know, yeah, the behavior like of the stuff. 4 a.m. call is the call of like, hey, it's done.
Yeah.
And the showing up 2 hours later.
Or like, oh, that was crazy how we just got rid of that body, huh?
Yeah. Well, no, the hey, it's done. And the 2 hours later showing up is the, all right, like.
What should we do?
What's our next game plan? I don't want
to
say it
over. I'm going to pretend to break up with you first.
Hey, that's a really good.
Because her story is saying that he called and then he showed up, but that behavior is more in track of the, hey, like, all right, I ditched this, and then showing up is, all right, let's talk about what we're going to do now, and since we're not on the phone, there's no possibility.
Yeah.
And another interesting thing is when the dad explains what he thinks, and he's like, he said, Mahfouz was probably watching when they got to Todd's house and they started making love. So he said that Mahfouz was in the forest watching them make love. And I was like, ew, dad.
Hey, at least he didn't say, and he watched them start making whoopee.
He watched them through the window as they
made whoopee.
Hooked up, bro. Yeah, I guess, I don't know. I guess that's the nicest way to put it, but it's just creepy talking about your dead son making love, I guess.
Yeah, that is weird.
Daughter. Oh, no, wait, yes.
Todd's dad. So the dad thinks that he gets jealous watching them hook up. And then Christy is kind of roped into helping him cover up the murder, like we said earlier. But all evidence points to him working alone. There's no real evidence that there was anybody helping. The cops themselves admit that it's weird that she said she doesn't immediately notice the body, even though it was right next to the front door.
Yeah, because her recount is saying that she walked in and called his name and went to the bedroom and discovered that he wasn't in the bedroom.
It just seems like such a dumb mistake.
Yet the body was laying like right by the door. Like,
maybe she panicked and like tried to like take him outside?
I stepped over his body and went to his room looking for him before I realized that I had stepped over him.
There's inconsistencies, but I mean, she could also be just as much as a victim. She doesn't want to pull herself into like, oh, I helped do this. You know, she was probably being forced and she was scared if that's the case, but still, you know, it's like, come clean. The family didn't believe Christy. They didn't let her attend the funeral. They want nothing to do with her. Christy's real sad about it at the end of the case. It's kind of sad that she thinks that she got pistoled. Yeah, she's being blamed for stuff that she didn't do. She got pistoled. Oh, poor pistol. So there's an update to this case. It's solved. Basically, Mahfouz, well, I guess we should say, first of all, Mahfouz goes missing and no one can find Mahfouz. So nobody can find Mahfouz or his foosballs. He was missing for a fucking while.
Yeah, he had a good life. Mahfouz was a beloved middle school math teacher in Bangladesh. And ultimately, his...
For 24 years,
For 24 years. And it wasn't so much the fact that we didn't know where he was. We knew exactly where he was the entire time. We knew what he was up to and what he was doing. It was just Bangladesh doesn't have an extradition treaty
with
the U.S., so we couldn't do shit. But he fucked up.
Apparently, he didn't know that people were watching him either.
Yeah, he didn't realize that people were tracking him, or he kind of just thought he was forgotten about. So he decided to go to a chess camp.
So he was a chess. Was he also like a chess teacher at, I guess, the middle school?
I guess, or chess coach? I don't know. It doesn't really talk about it, but it says that ultimately he got caught because he left the country to go to India to attend this, like, chess camp, and when he showed up to the airport, they were like, hey, so we know who you are
and we're cool with India. We're Americans, we're cool with India. Extradition,
we have an extradition treaty with the U.S. so
you have to come with us.
He pleads guilty in 2013 to voluntary manslaughter.
So that's the downfall of Marfouz. Is he is, hey kids, you know, chess camp doesn't pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't go to chess camp.
Don't go to chess camp. Moral of the story. If you're convicted murderer and it's a country that has an extradition treaty with the U.S.
So there's an interesting post on the Unsolved Mysteries Facebook. It's not the official one, just so you know. It's ran by a fan page. But the way that they word the summary of the case, they do like a memorial for Todd because it was like his memorial of his passing. There's a couple extra little things here that I don't know. I don't know how to fact check. So apparently they say the cigarette butts were also found outside and the DNA for them matched Mafuza's DNA. Also, the way that they word it is that they believe that Christy left the next morning, and then Mafuz entered the house, stabbed Todd to death, which is what they say. But that he had forced Christy to come back to help him with Todd's body and clean up the scene. So Todd's family does blame Christy, which we know. They do think that she does know more than she's getting at. But now that you guys mentioned the call and the visit, those are behaviors that are very kind of telling, like you guys said. It's not just like, because what was the excuse again that he called at 4?
There's no...
Just like, oh, I'm at home.
There was no real reason. They never say. I mean, there could be a reason that he called, but the way Unsolved Mysteries portrays it is kind of like...
Well, yeah, I got to think, man, maybe you're right. Maybe the cops just gave her a pass.
More info on Huck's confession... He said he arrived the night of the murder only to find Christy and Todd having sex. He claims he waited several hours until Christy left. After she left, he confronted Todd and stabbed him to death. Based on the confession, it's no longer believed that Christy has any involvement in the murder because of his confession. But at the same time...
Maybe he's just taking the fall to spare her.
Yeah, it could be just be covering for her ass.
Maybe.
I still love her. Mm-hmm. Still love my Christy.
So it's kind of hard. I feel bad for her if she's been shunned by the family. I feel really bad for her. That sucks if she didn't have anything to do with it.
David, I hate to break it to you, but if you make me help you dispose of a body because you killed someone and the police ask me questions, I'm going to sing like a motherfucking canary.
I wouldn't, David.
Thank you.
If you called me at 3 a.m., I just say, whose car are we taking?
Or when we watched Umbrella Academy and he walks in, the brother walks in with a dead body and he's like, oh. He's like,
oh, it's that kind of night.
And he says, are we burning or buried? I love that show. If you guys, it's so much fun.
I've seen the first couple episodes. I haven't.
You should watch it with the kids. It's a little violent. No, but not with the kids. Super.
Oh man, no. I'm hooked right now.
It's so good.
Black Monday.
How many have you watched?
Dude, I'm almost done with season one, finally.
Yeah, season two just got nominated for a bunch of Emmys.
I forgot how good and how funny Don Cheadle was.
You know who I love in that show, who I miss, and I'm like, I'm glad that they're doing a role that's like meaty, dramatic, and comedic, is the girl from Scary Movie, Regina King. No,
yeah.
Regina, I forget her name.
Spectre.
She's so fucking funny. And dude, she's like... She's like in her early 50s, like 40s, early 50s. Like, dude, she is such a babe.
Yeah, she is.
And Andrew Rannells is great too. He is also a babe and a half.
Regina Hall. Funny. You're talking about Regina Hall.
What did I say? Regina King?
Regina King. Another actress.
It's the joke. You'll see in season two, people keep calling her Regina King because Regina King was on this show in the 80s. And it's like a running joke.
Funny.
That people keep calling her Regina King. So maybe that is something that happened to her in real life.
I haven't gotten there yet.
But Regina King is also awesome. Great. Regina King is also one of those like ageless, amazing actresses that like, I was like, what? She was on a sitcom in the 1980s and she just starred in Watchmen and she looked she looked like she could be like a 35-year-old, like an adult, but
yeah.
And she's also the voice of, remember that cartoon, The Boondocks?
Yeah.
She's the voice of both of the boys and the Boondocks. Did you watch the Watchmen series on
HBO? Yeah, I watched it.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Regina King and Regina Hall. Those are two damn good Reginas. Regina Spector, let's throw her in.
I love that they did, Paul Scheer from The League.
Oh,
I love that.
So funny.
I love that show. He's so funny. And then Horatio Sanz, dude, they brought him back. God, I haven't seen him in like a solid role like that in a while. So it's a good show. I recommend it.
Black Monday on
Showtime. Thank you so much for getting me onto it.
All right, so the next case we're going to be talking about is an unexplained. And we're going to Lake Champlain, which is upstate New York, and Vermont. I guess it's in two states. The Iroquois Native Americans, and their cave drawings and stuff have always paid homage, as they say, to a great horned serpent. So they think that this is an ancient creature, this Lake Champlain monster. It's like a sea creature. It's like an Americana Loch Ness monster.
Yeah, and Lake Champlain is pretty big. Like you said, New York, Vermont, but also goes up into Canada in like the province of Quebec. So I was wondering, because I was like, how big is this thing? And lengthwise... From like, because it's really long. It's like north to south, and it's 107 miles. Width, it's only 14, so it's not very wide, but it's super long.
Oh, okay. So that's why it traverses multiple states and stuff.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have been seeing this monster.
It's like a nice little pretty slit.
This great horned serpent. They would honor it, and people would see it everywhere. The residents even named it Champ, and this is the Lake Champlain sea monster. Good old Champ. The first witness we're going to be talking about is Sandra Mancy. And, apparently as a kid, her grandfather would scare her and tell her if she did something bad or didn't follow the rules that Champ would eat her. And he would say stuff like "stay still" while they were fishing because Champ, because he would throw her over and Champ would munch down on her. So July 1977, she takes a badass picture when she's on vacation with her two kids and her fiance Tony. They were all hanging out, chilling by the lake. Tony goes up to get a camera because he noticed he hadn't taken a lot of pictures. So she's sitting alone and the kids are playing when she sees the lake kind of turning, the water kind of rustling. She thought it was a very big group of fish, but then the neck lifted up from the water and she could make out the features, and there was a bunch of teeth and water coming out of the mouth. And then her fiance notices what's going on and he like freaks out and starts yelling for her to get up. and he's coming back with the camera. So she turns around and it's still there, and then she takes the picture. And she kept the picture hidden for 2 years. She wouldn't even show anybody the picture. She said she destroyed the negative, which is a weird move.
Like, which is dumb.
Yeah, I don't understand
that. Why would you do that?
Like, I was scared people were going to think I was crazy, so I destroyed the negative? Like the original? Like, that makes...
Why wouldn't you just hide it with the picture?
Yeah. So 2 years later, she blows up the picture, and she brings it to a crypto guy named Joe Zarzynski, and he's real excited. He's so fucking down
for this Loch Ness monster.
So Joe Zarzynski's so fucking hard for this Loch Ness.
How hard is he?
He's so hard for this champ. For this champ picture that he says it was like all the Christmases at once. Well, that was good.
I'm glad you picked up on it, but someone over here.
I had an answer. I was trying to answer your question. The answer is how hard is he? The answer is it was like all Christmases at once.
Oh wow, that is hard.
And then my next note says virgin, which is a little harsh now, but I took these notes a long time ago. It was pre-COVID. No, I don't. Even if it was, I don't know what that has anything to do with anything.
Stop virgin shaming David.
Yeah, I don't want to virgin shame this guy, Joe. They take the picture to be analyzed, and some other nerd says that there's no hoaxing of any kind, no evidence of any hoaxing, superimposition, nothing like that. And the pic freaks everybody out. This picture, they put it in the paper, and you know, it becomes public knowledge.
Doesn't he keep saying it's a beautiful picture?
Yeah. Oh, he loves it's all the Christmases. He loves it. It was so hard. So of course people start noticing the similarities to Loch Ness. Some people think it might be a plesiosaur, which would have been around 60 to 70 million years ago. That's actually when it would have been extinct, and it was kind of an aquatic reptile. There's also this thing called the Zeuglodon. There was a snake-like whale that existed about 20 million years ago. So that's a little more recent by tens of millions of years. Or a lake sturgeon, which is just a fucking fish that can get up to about 7 feet. But I don't think it'd be able to fully stick its neck out of the water like that. So the second witness is Walter and Sandy Toppins. And their daughter, Heidi, and they go onto the lake with a camcorder trying to find the shit, kind of.
Like hunting?
Yeah, it's July 7th, 1988, near dusk. Walter and his daughter think that they had seen Champ the day before, so they're looking now. They see nothing, and then they see rippling in the water again. And that's when they see several creatures, a series of small humps. So that might just have been one.
My humps. My lovely lady. Lakely humps.
Okay. I don't know. My lovely lakely humps. I mean, it does work.
It works.
I'll leave it at that. Technically, yes, that joke worked. Lakely humps. Oh, God.
Swinging a miss.
So several creatures in a series of small humps, lady, lakely humps. And they said they watched them for about 45 minutes. Five humps in a row, all moving in unison like one big long creature. Yeah. And then one hump comes out of the water, and gracefully the head came out and looked at her.
And then went right back down. Interpretation.
Yeah.
It's speaking of ASMR, it's very ASMR. She's like, and he came and looked.
She makes her forearm and hand loose, like the shape of a Loch Ness monster.
And I screamed, and I wish I wouldn't have because it made his head go down faster.
Yeah, and then she goes,
"Can we?"
And he went up and down.
That her explaining that experience was very traumatic for me.
Why is that?
It gave me flashbacks of being in ballet class.
Or like an aerobics class, or like yoga, or like
okay, the arm goes up here, and then we're gonna port a bra forward, and then we're gonna open arms to the wide. Like yeah,
that's very calming, Dan.
And that's what Champ did.
Like literally, like her explaining that was like, I had that moment where like in the movie Get Out, where she like bangs on the teacup and like,
yeah,
you just see the dude get like sunken into the chair. That was what I felt when she did
that. That was your moment. That was your teacup chair moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was rough.
But basically, yeah, they think it's something unknown to zoology and it's spooky. And, but yeah, this is a thing that people have been seeing for a long time. And actually, yeah, one of my favorite writers, Joe Hill, has a great short story called By the Waters of Lake Champlain. And it's about these kids who find one washed up outside of their house, like in the 20s. And it's really fucking cool little short story. They actually made it, they adapted it in an episode of the Creepshow TV series, and they butchered the fuck out of that story. It's completely different. It's cool, but it's so different. But yeah, I like them both, but the story is so good. And but Joe Hill was always upset, like when he was a little kid, apparently he's Stephen King's son, and apparently they were expats for a couple months and they lived in England. And Joe Hill says one of his earliest memories is his mom and dad driving him to Loch Ness because he was obsessed with the Loch Ness monster. That's so that's cool. Like horror purebred, you know.
You're obsessed with a monster? We're going to take it and go see him.
Yeah. That's what happens when you're Stephen King's son. But yeah, Joe Hill. It's. I think it's in his collection, his new one, Full Throttle, By the Waters of Lake Champlain. And it's a great little short story. It's pretty spooky. It's cool because it's like, you know, they find this washed up. And it's like, go tell mom. And it's like, mom's not going to believe that there's a prehistoric creature washed up on your fucking, you know. So it's cool. It's cool.
Well, the video they show is cool. And then they do like a little video reenactment, which was
kind of
cool for the time.
Yeah, they spent some money on it, right?
But yeah, but people just think it's like tree stumps. They just, a lot of people don't buy it. But apparently, like Native Americans had seen it too, like
they had worshipped a water serpent or something.
Yeah, so apparently in the reason the whole like folklore started was in 1609 was Samuel de Champlain wrote that he saw a lake monster. It was 5 foot long and it was as thick as a man's thigh. Which sounds like an eel to me.
Yeah, that just sounds like it was probably a sturgeon, a lake sturgeon or whatever.
Yeah. But anyways, so it just kind of grew. And like Native Americans again said that they saw it, that they, you know, to 8 to 10 foot. And then different people started. So like even like around the area, like the Vermont Lake, they have like high schools and stuff will do like the Vermont Lake Monster as their mascot and stuff. And like minor league baseball teams. So it's like
the champs.
Yeah, the champs, I guess.
Yeah, that's a fun story. It'd be cool to live in a town that had like a cool little like thing about it, like that, like a cool little rumor or legend or mystery.
But again, it's long. It's a long lake, but definitely would be like worth scouting. Where are the bones?
I would love to go to Lake Champlain.
You want to find.
You know, it's another cool thing. I've probably talked about this on this podcast, but another cool thing about Joe Hill and lakes is he thinks that he found this really famous Jane Doe. He thinks that he found her as an extra in Jaws. I'm pretty sure I've told you about this, right, Eli?
Yeah. I think you have.
It's a cool story. Look into it. Joe Hill thinks that this famous Jane Doe was an extra in Jaws, and the timelines. They match up and the locations match up pretty well, decently. But yeah, that's fun. Guy likes lakes.
But we're gonna have to post that whole scene, that like few seconds of her reenacting with her arm, the
up and down.
I loved it.
And you could, and all the bracelets and all the 90s-ness of her attire, and yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
So yeah, amnesia. This is fun. Amnesias we get every so often, right? This is a French Canadian guy who definitely knows who he is. I mean, who doesn't know who he is?
Did you really think that he knew the whole time?
I don't.
I think this fucker faked it. I think he was trying to run from something and just got fucking caught. He was just like, ah, fuck. Sacre bleu, you fucking cut me.
Well, you guys remember the...
Tabernacle.
Do you remember the other amnesia guy who fucking faked amnesia? Well, we think he faked amnesia because he stole a fucking truck of frozen seafood.
Yeah, I remember that guy. He wasn't wearing like a Metallica t-shirt and like... He pretended like he didn't know his mom. She met him after the show. She's like,
dude, I found the perfect screenshot. Was just like, oh.
That motherfucker faked his amnesia face for stealing fish dicks.
So let's talk about, Mr. April. French guy doesn't know who he is. You're literally nothing. You feel so empty. My notes are so great. I put capital T-Y at the end. Like, because... It's not nice to talk about these things. He's got a great French Canadian accent. So May 1992, it's a cold ass morning. This guy wakes up on the coastline with a duffel bag. He doesn't know who the fuck he is. He makes his way down the road. He walks up to the town of Gorda, where he finds a phone. Right. He finally finds a payphone, and then he realizes he has nobody to fucking call.
Yeah, he's like, who am I going to call? Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
God damn you.
Did Eli steal your joke, Dan?
Yeah.
I don't know, I thought that was so funny. God damn it. You stole it.
God damn you.
So he didn't know stupid anybody. American. He realizes he has nobody to call. He doesn't even know himself. He finds a library card that has the name Pierre April. April.
And then Pierre April. Pierre, and he says, that's not my signature.
Yeah.
I do not know who that person is. That person is dead to me.
What's funny is apparently he also says that that wasn't his handwriting. So he's like,
how do you know that? There's no handwriting. I do not know.
This is not my
handwriting. I do not know how I write.
Because
I woke up in desert.
You are literally nothing. You feel so empty. I woke up in desert.
Comme ci, comme ça.
So he has $17 in his wallet, and he sets out hitchhiking.
Sorry,
because he can remember. He can remember. Like San Diego sounds familiar to him.
Sorry, that's the one thing that Eli remembered from. They remember you.
We talked about this in another episode. I only know how to say "comme ci, comme ça."
I'm so sorry. Once again, podcast listeners, we want you to know that Eli and Dan had French class in high school together. If you get anything out of this podcast, remember that fact. Anytime anything French comes up, or remotely French,
Miss Junstone, Miss Junstone, who is no longer with us, did not teach me the proper ways of French. I learned from Pepe Le Pew and Pierre.
And
Escargot?
Wait, and Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès.
And Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès. And Pierre Escargot.
Oh, my God. What is that from, Pierre Escargot?
From all
fucking
that.
All that.
Keenan. Oh, man. French stereotypes are so whack, right?
You have
but kind of
no wonder. Kind of no correct. Wonder Americans. No wonder French people make fun of Americans. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I always remember when I was like I showed my French friend Dexter's Laboratory when he tries to learn French, and he the tape gets stuck. So all he learns is omelette du fromage, which is cheese omelette. And I showed it to him, and he was laughing, and he thought it was funny. And at the end, he's like, this is not French. It's omelette au fromage. Oh. Oh. I'm like, what? They didn't even get that right. Semantics. You wouldn't say cheese omelette that way. Omelette du fromage. He's like, this means nothing. He's like, he thought it was funny. But So with $17, he goes out hitchhiking to San Diego because for some reason, San Diego like sounds familiar to him. So when he gets there, he says, and eat meant nothing. It meant nothing. Like, nothing looked familiar to him. A bus driver.
God damn it. I wish some bus fare.
A bus driver was nice enough to give him a ride. Oui, oui.
amuse-bouche.
Amuse-bouche, goddammit.
Amuse-bouche. Fuck, I remember I did this some stupid selfie video when I was in France last time, and I just said, like, a bunch of, like, just a bunch of generic French things in, like, one sentence, like, au revoir, salut, amuse-bouche. hello, hello.
Hello.
So the bus driver takes him to the homeless shelter. The lady said that she has a lot of people that pretend to have amnesia because they want like drugs and fun things, and she said that this was not the case. So what they're thinking is that this is some sort of trauma induced amnesia, which is super rare. It's also really rare to lose long term memory for very long. So apparently he immediately knew physics and math. And he was great at computers, and he could also fly an airplane. He's also an artist. He picked up a guitar and played right away, knew all the songs. He could type 85 words a minute. And he became a busker because he could play and sing. That's something that came right to him. He says he learned to play guitar in 2 hours.
Right, he had like an artistic vibe. It shows him like sketching on some notepad, like some
– yeah. He said that when he started playing guitar for people in parks, that he is not empty and that now he's very busy, because before he didn't really have anything. He was just wandering aimlessly, I guess. He sat down with a composite with an artist to do some composite sketches, and they drew somebody that he thinks is a friend or a cousin or an old boss. But they could never figure out who it was or a name or anything.
Yeah, there was two people, right? One was a man, and then one was a woman.
Yeah, and this is what kind of backs up what you guys were saying earlier, that maybe he's trying to escape some sort of tragedy or traumatic thing, because he says some things that he remembers come back to him, and they're not especially pleasant.
Painful. Yeah, he's like, painful, I'd like pleasant. To talk about these.
I don't want to talk about these things. They're not necessarily.
I'd rather have a baguette.
Yeah, exactly. So, and what you guys were saying earlier is that maybe, he forgot all this stuff because he had an awful upbringing, awful family, and then he goes on Unsolved Mysteries to find his family and just go back in the same situation, or whatever it may be.
God, I hope that's not true.
Because what he does say, like. He says that it's awful to have to not remember anything, but then he'll remember things, and it's like truly painful. So it's like, what the fuck? Like, what do you mean?
What are you running from? Like, where were you before? Yeah. Like,
he says it's. But also, I kind of interpreted it as, it's just the feeling of getting a memory back so quick, or the feeling of not having a memory there is what was painful. So I'm not sure exactly what he meant. I don't know if that what I just said made any sense. But,
yeah.
You know, yeah, it's like the fact of having an empty space in your brain being the painful part rather than the memory.
The actual memory part. That filled that space. Yeah. That could be true.
Yeah. It's hard to say what he meant by that, because he explains knowing and not knowing as being just as awful, that he wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Yeah. And he looks physically traumatized.
He does. It's he does just, look like a scared puppy the whole time he's talking.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's not just like almost like PTSD, where he's like, I do not like to think about these things. And he even says when he starts, he says, I'm sorry that this some of this stuff is very hard to talk about.
Yeah, he seems more. He definitely seems more genuine than the seafood thief.
Yeah, I agree.
Whose name escapes me. So the update is a viewer in Canada recognizes him as somebody that had worked for his wife, and she knows his name. His name was Pierre April. April. So his dad's a doctor, and he's got two sisters, and they hadn't seen him in 5 months, apparently. And he didn't believe, like, that they were his family. He had them, like, send him a package of, like, pictures and birth certificates. Like,
that's all this so stuff. Weird, right? Imagine getting that package and, like, seeing pictures of you that you don't remember.
The dad asks if he remembers his mom. And she's like, no, I do not. And then he says that the mom was on the other line and started crying. He could hear her crying. It's super sad. But at the end, he's happy to be reunited with his family, and he says, "I am someone again."
And he has a fiance.
Yeah, that he met while he knew nothing about himself, which is interesting. Yeah. And kind of, like, that's – I feel like that's the most interesting part. Like, give me a fucking meet-cute rom-com where someone falls in love with a soul rather than any baggage that's attached to it. Give me that. That's good. I like that.
I don't remember who I am, but I know this is who I am.
I feel like that's the story that should have been highlighted more.
Told, yeah.
It's like, oh, he met my family and he or she immediately dumped me. I'm pretty sure it's a lady. He says fiance. Yeah. And there's another update, PS, I guess.
An update to the update?
Apparently he regained all of his memories eventually. And I did no more research. Let's move
on. I remember why I left in the first place.
These people.
My family was crazy.
My family fucking sucks. They were crazy. I know nothing. Now I know something. And I wish I knew nothing. poor Pierre. I don't know. I'd really like to know more about, like, you know, how his life went on and
I do too.
If he learned about the cause or what, like, how he lost his memory. Like, I feel like, yeah, there's like a prequel there.
Yes, there is.
Lastly, at the end of this episode, we have two weird, like, special alerts. I guess these were, like...
Like, tack-ons? Yeah, I'm like... I even, like, messaged you guys when I was watching this. Hey, like, what the hell?
Hey, Robert Stack, we got 15 more minutes to fill in this episode, so...
It actually wasn't even. It was, like, 5 minutes. Yeah. So, yeah, really quickly, fast-breaking case in 1992... two women were kidnapped and murdered by their husband. The first one is, we're talking about Joseph and Lois Krantz of Kalamazoo, Michigan. They were married for 14 years. Not good 14 years.
He was it was rough.
Yeah. He was in and out of prison for burglary and forgery. And July 31st of 92, he gets out of prison. This time it was for 2.5 months for embezzlement and parole violations. His wife was pregnant at the time, but she wanted a divorce. And August 5th, he shows up at Lois's apartment with a gun. The neighbor was watching the kids in the other bedroom. The neighbor who was watching the kids says that he breaks in, forces her into the car, and they drive away. Then he calls his mom and says that he killed her and dumped her body.
Near a lake,
they didn't know where, right? So 3 days later, her body is found in sort of the general area that his mom mentioned. And on August 12th of 92, she's laid to rest, and he is still missing. So this is a crazy little story. And there's an update
on that. Yeah, I wish we had, like, more info on it. Like, they just kind of just pepper it in there, and you're like, what?
He apparently... Oh, fuck. I wish I had a date because I feel like he was on the run for a while. The update is that he gets arrested in Laredo, Texas, and he's working as a border guard.
Which is weird, right? Was that like a border patrol?
I'm guessing.
Because now border patrol is very hard. Like they do a huge background check. Maybe it's because of this guy.
They vet the fuck out of you. Maybe he changed his name or something, you know?
I don't know. And then, not only that, that's like the end, right, of that segment?
Yeah.
Then we get another one.
Besides that he's charged with first-degree murder and he gets life in prison. But yeah, special alert 2 of 2. This one's just sad and fucking dark. Like, oh man, 65-year-old woman kidnapped needs medicine. Now we're going to Tennessee. This is Martha Doe, who's the lady. And the husband is Alan Roberts. So 9:30 a.m., he leaves to go to work. This is August 7th of 92. He returns and she's completely gone without a trace. That night he gets a call. Someone saying that someone wants him to pay them $100,000 or he would split open her head. And then there was no further contact and he was at a loss for what to do next. The update here sucks ass. It's terrible. Martha Roberts' neighbor, Charles Lord, is arrested for her rape and murder. And then he leads police to her makeshift grave that was at the end of his driveway.
They must have lived on some like country road because like when I think of neighbor, I live in the suburbs, right? Like my neighbor's 10 feet away from me.
Like if your neighbor had a fucking body buried at the end of his driveway, you'd know.
Exactly. This has got to be like a different type of situation, living situation.
So he's sentenced to life and he dies in prison. And shit.
Yeah, that is just sad.
That one is really depressing. Like the rape and murder of like an elderly, sickly woman. Like how depraved, you know? Extra depraved.
But it was just weird that they added those on there, I guess, because like, oh, we filmed them. We might as well put them on there.
Oh, the way that they added? Well, because they were special alerts. They were like ongoing cases that they needed help with. Like,
yeah.
And yeah.
Like right away. Kind of like a silver alert or like an amber alert kind of thing.
We didn't have cell phones back then, obviously. But Stack says that like every now and then, certain like law enforcement agencies will contact us just because they need some fucking answers. They need anything they can get. And of course, I mean, like the new Netflix, everyone watched it, but it's still different because back then there was TV and everyone watched. There was like, you know, there was the network channels. So all eyes were on all of these cases all the time. Now it's just like most eyes. I mean, Netflix is definitely the biggest platform that they could have.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. But still, it's still not that big of a platform.
Isn't that crazy that Netflix pitched their idea for mailing their DVDs of movies to people, to Blockbuster and Hollywood Video? And they were both
I love the story of Blockbuster because – in like 2011, I actually worked at Dish Network in one of their call centers. I was like a customer service guy. And we were trying to – like they bought Blockbuster and we would sell – like we – Dish Network had a Blockbuster like Netflix service. Like we're like, oh, yeah, get your mailing – like it's like for like $10 more a month, you can add Blockbuster and you can go to the website, add any movie and we'll mail it right to you. Dish Network used to do that.
Too late.
And even back then, I knew the story of them getting laughed out of Blockbuster's head.
I remember when we first moved here, Blockbuster also was desperate and tried doing their own Redbox. They had at grocery stores, certain grocery stores here, they had their own little Blockbuster like vending machine where you can get
your movie. I used to check availabilities when I worked at Dish. I'd be like, oh, you can rent the movie here. Or you go to the website. I remember explaining people how to use the website.
I think there's like one Blockbuster, isn't there? Like the original one. And it's
I know some of the ones that are still that were locally owned. Like there might still be some around, you know? Which is so cool.
I don't know.
But yeah. So that's the end of this episode. We have more new Unsolved Mysteries coming. Let us know. Should we wait? No. We're going to keep putting out episodes, right? Yeah.
No, we're going to keep going. Let's keep going and then we'll put a pause on this.
Yeah, like our feed might look super weird because of this new Unsolved Mysteries, but we want to cover the new stuff as it comes out, as everyone's thinking and talking about it. But also, we're going to continue to cover this old stuff because it's just so much fun. And at the end of the day, we are the Stack Pack. Even though the heart and soul of Robert Stack is very much prevalent and a part of this new Netflix series, we are, at the end of the day, the Stack Pack.
you guys stay tried and true.
Yeah. And this is now fun.
But, hopefully, dude, we're in season five? We've been doing this how many years? We've been doing this for years.
20
now, right?
I think we started in June 2017.
Dude.
Yeah.
Look at us.
Yeah, it's fun.
We're coming up on like searches. I search us all the time. So give us a good like little a nice little
Yeah, tell your friends. And if your friends are people that just want to listen to Serial or some NPR produced true crime,
then tell
don't,
them,
I guess don't tell them about us because
do not give us the review. If
one,
you,
that
you
that one star review really bummed us out because we were like, but we're not journalists.
But we're funny.
Clearly, we are not journalists. I don't know if I've ever said this in this show. Clearly, we are not professionals. We enjoy each other's company, and we enjoy true crime. And we enjoy
your feedback.
Yeah.
More than anything, I think we enjoy your feedback.
We do enjoy the feedback.
Positive only, though. Positive feedback.
That is
only.
True. We are sensitive little bitches, I guess.
Nah, I enjoy the negative ones. You know why? The negative ones make us tough.
Yeah.
Makes me want to be better.
Yeah.
The negative ones make me want to be a better podcast journalist. Maybe the negative one makes me want to be Sarah Koenig.
I want to be Sarah
Koenig. I'm never going to be Sarah Koenig.
I want to be super dry. No, actually, she's not dry and boring. There's a lot of her personality in her voice. That's why she's good. But she is. She's obviously a very good journalist, and they have researchers, and you know, like even like last podcast on the left, which is skews comedy. They have research assistants and stuff. It's awesome. Usually Dan does a lot of digging up, and he gets to be the fact guy, which has been working out for us pretty well.
Yeah.
Plus,
he's handsome. Mm-hmm. And we also had friends together. I don't know if you knew that.
And if you didn't know, not only did they go to high school together, but they had French.
Hey, class. Where in France do you want to go?
Stop planning this without me. I want to go too. So I can say merci and amuse-bouche.
You and Josh can stay here and take care of the kids.
That's actually, yeah. That actually kind of sounds like fun too, honestly. I'm not going to lie. Just hanging out with Joss and watching. Oh, we'd probably watch some garbage TV too. Like
you want to get some.
She'd make
French
you watch
foods?
The Bachelor. Probably.
Oh, I'd probably get into it too. Honestly, that doesn't sound bad. Just hanging out with your kids and watching reality shows with Jocelyn. That's. I mean, that doesn't sound bad.
Jocelyn's that's cool. About the only reality show that she likes. Jocelyn's
fun.
Is The Bachelor.
Oh shit! Well,
she then, likes well, pretty quality I'll introduce television. Her
to Below Deck. To Below Deck, and then yeah, get into it. anyway, we love you guys. Thanks for listening to us bullshit.
Yes, we do love you.
We'll be back next week. We're still covering season 5, which I think is on. I think it also might be on Pluto or Pluto TV or Tubi, one of those. But yeah,
for sure it's on
Amazon
YouTube
Prime,
and for sure
IMDb TV. Maybe IMDb TV even has their own app, but YouTube as well. Yeah, YouTube is probably the most accessible. We should just say YouTube. Like, you can watch all the original Robert Stack hosted. Stuff on YouTube. They're like in playlists and seasons, and yeah, it's all FilmRise. It's all put out by them. It's not like some shady thing, you know. It's not like some bootleg thing. It's all them. Yeah,
Pornhub. I think it's on Pornhub.
Probably on Pornhub. They just blur out a lot of stuff that doesn't need to be blurred out, and then they put it on Pornhub. It's good. And yeah, October 19th, more Unsolved Mysteries. I'm excited.
More Volume 2.
Oh, yes. Thanks so much. Thank you to
you know what I'm looking forward to? I'm looking forward to like cold weather. Like maybe doing this with like drinking eggnog. Oh.
Dude, I'm so excited for the next couple of months. It's so interesting during this quarantine how like a lot of TV's gone away, but a lot of TV is still yet to come out. The Stand, which if you guys like Stephen King, go over to the Spook Troop and listen to our we covered the 90s Stand, and one episode we did in January, one episode we did in March of this year. So one episode is like pre-COVID, and then one episode is post-COVID, and that's kind of fun to listen to.
That is fun,
and
especially because I called this shit back in January.
Yeah, Dan. You can listen to Dan talk about COVID in our January
and
episode.
You're just kind of like,
we like brush it off. Like, shut up. What are you talking about? Dumbass. And you can hear me.
We're not going on quarantine. Yeah, what sickness.
It. Yeah, Dan nailed it. And also on the Spook Troop, we also just, my friend and Mondo and I just, we covered every single Scream movie. And I think we just decided today that we're going to watch Last House on the Left, which is the first Wes Craven movie. So we just finished covering the last Wes Craven movie, and we're going to go back to the
and
first
you know,
one.
He's doing another Scream movie.
Well, he's dead.
Well, Wes Craven's dead?
Yeah, he died in 2015.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But they are doing another Scream movie. They just announced, the guy from Boys.
well, he's dead.
So they just casted Jack Quaid from The Boys as the lead of Scream, the new Scream movie that they're making. Jack Quaid, his parents are Dennis Quaid and Meg Griffin.
Meg Griffin from Family Guy?
Meg Ryan. His parents are Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan. But you know what's also funny is that his uncle is Randy Quaid. But anyway, yeah, so the new Scream movie.
Because they're brothers. The Randy and Dennis Quaid are brothers.
Have you ever seen Ready or Not? Which is it's a fun new horror movie. I think it's on HBO right now, and it's like this bride gets married into this really rich family, and they play a game when someone gets married, and she picks the tag, but it's like tag with murder. So this whole movie is like a game of tag where the whole family is trying to kill her, and it's a comedy, and it's hilarious. It's such a good time.
So. There's two things that I remember of Randy Quaid. I think of Shitter's Fool from Christmas Vacation. Okay, three things. Shitter's Fool, Bet You Could Use a Cold One from the original National Lampoon's Vacation. And then the third one is when he is in Independence Day and he goes, "Hello, boys, I'm back."
You don't remember that video of him fucking his wife who was wearing a Bernie Madoff mask? Because
no, Dennis Quaid did that. Jesus
Christ. No, Randy. No, sorry, Dennis. Oh. Randy's the crazy one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Randy is the crazy one. Yeah. Sorry, that's what I'm thinking about. Randy Quaid.
He posted a YouTube video about how, like, he was ran out of the country by Bernie Madoff and everyone's out to get him. And he put a paper mask of Bernie Madoff on him and he was, like, behind his wife. Like, it's like his face and then she's, like, in front of him. Like, he's, like, doing her doggy style. And I don't know if there's actual, like, fucking penetration because it's just like, you know, it's just their faces. But yeah, he's weird.
Yeah, he is weird.
But yeah, anyway, but the reason I brought up fucking Ready or Not, the fun tag murder movie, is because they hired those people to direct and write the new Scream movie, and everybody involved really liked their take. So David Arquette and Courtney Cox, who are divorced now, are coming back to be in the movie together. And Neve Campbell is like, I guess it hasn't been officially announced, but it's pretty much certain that she'll be back. And then they just cast Jack Quaid to join as the kind of young adult cast. So I think it's cool. Yeah, they're making a new Scream movie. It's cool. Yeah, a bunch of stuff is actually going back into production. Hopefully it goes well. Thanks, Eli. Thanks, Dan. As always, we're the Stack Pack. I'm David. Thanks. We'll be back next week. For every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening, and perhaps that someone is you. Good night.